with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas in the Circus Sportsbook Studios, coming to you on a Friday morning on the West Coast, early in the afternoon here on the East Coast. Ben Wilson with Mike Pritchard. It's been a blast to hanging out with you, Pritch. We're in for Femi and Michael today, and I'll be back with Michael this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday, bright and early. 7 a.m. here in Vegas, 10 a.m. Eastern. But we've got a fun hour still to come, because we'll be joined by Julian Council from the Locked On Panthers podcast in 15 minutes preview the other week two NFL preseason game that kicks off tonight, Panthers-Giants, and then Josh Applebaum with his market insights reports on week two in the NFL preseason. We'll discuss that with Josh in about a half hour. But let's get into it. Time for the pros perspective with Mike Pritchard. Let's do it. And the official news we have on the show today, Dalvin Cook officially signing his deal with the New York Jets, coming in the running back room, still at least a week away from practice per ESPN's Adam Schefter. And a very interesting soundbite on how he was lured to the New York Jets. It's probably not a surprise that people would say a guy in the NFC North for his whole career was partially lured by a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, who was also in that division as well. But here's what Cook had to say as to how and why he ended up deciding and coming to the New York Jets.
Being on the other side of that for the last 6 years, you know, I couldn't be on the other side no more. So it was just like being, I got the chance to go join him and, you know, help him win again. You know, that was a big thing to come over here.
If he isn't here, is it likely, Dalvin, that you would have signed with somebody else?
I don't know. I can't answer that one for you. I'm just glad he is here. He didn't necessarily recruit me. We had conversations, you know, which I wouldn't speak on. But he don't got to recruit. His game recruit itself. Like Aaron is Aaron. Like, if you don't want to be a part of something like that, I don't know what it is, what you want in football.
And you have to say, as much, you know, the Hard Knocks watch has been kind of comical, just because, you know, the hype, it could not get any higher, the hype train on the Jets. But it does make you realize, if you didn't know this before, but Aaron Rodgers, I mean, he's able to connect to teammates. He might be an elder statesman, but, I mean, he's still able to connect with guys. And it's obvious that there's so much respect there. It's just a matter of how much is that really going to translate into wins on the field this year.
I mean, it helps. It does. Don't get me wrong. But, Dalvin, you want my perspective on things. Dalvin's a mercenary. I mean, it was the money that got Dalvin to New York. Aaron is the cherry on top of that sundae, I guess. You know, yeah, I get to look across the locker room with a Hall of Fame quarterback, but the chance to make $8.6 million is why Dalvin is in New York. So I think it's true earlier in the year. Like, if you are going through true free agency and you have a guy like a Hall of Fame quarterback on your roster and you're the missing piece, then, oh, yeah, they're going to lure you, right? I mean, my own experiences in terms of people luring themselves to Denver or getting to Denver because of John Elway. It changes when you have Mike Shanahan and Terrell Davis, Shannon Sharpe, and all these guys in place. And then, okay, oh, Neil Smith comes over. Oh, Alfred Williams comes over. Or all these players that are free agents that say, look, not only is the money right, but this quarterback's going to help me win the Super Bowl. And I think eventually that's what Dalvin is hinting at. These guys are mercenaries right now. Clowney signing with the Ravens. I mean, all this stuff. It's all fine and dandy with the quarterback stuff. But if the money's right, they're going to get the player.
Sure. And it's the question I have, and what we're going to find out very quickly. Once Cook returns, he's not even going to be with the team. You're expected to become a first-time father. Mm-hmm. And then still coming back off that off-season surgery, at least as the report from Adam Schefter mentioned, at least a week away from practice. Reportedly, 1 year, $7 million. Dollar deal for Dalvin Cook coming in as a running back for the New York Jets, but with a at times shaky offensive line in Minnesota last year, there were not a whole lot of holes for Cook to run through, and when there were, he did not really take advantage. A big reason why Minnesota felt like, okay, we've seen enough, despite what had been a very good career up to that point, was one of the worst running backs as far as, you know, rush yardage over expectation. If you look at some of the advanced stats on that, and it's not like the Jets have a sure thing at offensive line with two aging tackles who have big injury concerns on the outside. That is my big concern for the Jets coming into 2023, especially with how loaded the division is and the good defenses they'll be facing on the opposite side. I realize as a quarterback, Aaron Rodgers has made a career out of making his offensive line look better and manipulating pockets, but doesn't that have to be a concern, especially if you're looking to bet a Cook season-long prop, 625.5 on the rush yards, that the O-line, we have no idea if that's actually going to be sustainable for a full season and if it'll be better than advertised.
Yeah, you know, all valid points. I think each and every year brings that optimism, right? And, you know, Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback, does elevate the play because of what they need to do getting the ball out of their hands and what they need to see happen. And the plays, too. I mean, Dalvin Cook, to me, I mean, he might have more receiving yards than rushing yards, whether it's the screen or whether it's quick plays to the outside. I mean, Dalvin Cook is a player that is a mismatch and it provides an advantage to you from a player standpoint. I think Breece Hall is going to eventually play. This buys him a little bit more time to make sure and ensure that he's completely healthy. But it's a potent offense. It's a potent lineup. But the concerns are valid. I mean, those are the question marks, right? And I think from an organization standpoint, you're going to try to fix those. Offensive line is a problem. Well, our offensive line has to be better. That's our focal point. So if that's the focal point of the Jets, and if they can solve that mystery and get better on the offensive line, then obviously they have the caliber of a team to make a run here.
And Breece Hall, we had the reports earlier in the week, getting closer and closer, coming back, and is going to be cleared here very, very soon for the New York Jets in that backfield. All right, pros perspective number two. I'm glad we're getting to this. It's the guy who's replacing Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, Jordan Love, and what his offensive lineman, elder statesman on that line, David Bakhtiari, had to say about his progress and ceiling in training camp.
I mean, definitely higher standard. He had 3 years to understand and master the offense, which is very fortunate for any first-round quarterback. Get to watch and see how a first ballot Hall of Famer and generational talent and a guy who borderline changed the quarterback position and how it's played and even the mechanics of even throwing the football. You were able to see that for 3 years and then now coming in. So, I mean, yeah, his baseline for me is way higher.
There we go. Here we go, Pritch.
Go Buffs. Go Buffs right there, Bakhtiari. Jordan Love, you got to be careful with this one. And I get it, David. And, you know, certainly you're going to support the quarterback. But Jordan is not Aaron. And what Aaron was able to do, and Jordan watched that. But you can't do it, right? I mean, there's a lot of things we can watch. But can we do it? Can we duplicate it? Can we, do it at the same level? I mean, Jordan's going to have to do it at his level or wherever he can execute this offense at. And we don't know where that is yet. He watched it. You know, certainly. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers was completely different from Brett, right? Even though he watched Brett. But, it's fascinating. You know, I could watch Andre Rison or Jerry Rice, but I'm not those guys, you know. And so you gotta have your own game. And so from a betting standpoint for me, I'm looking for Jordan Love's game. And I want to see what he's capable of.
The biggest thing that helps out Jordan Love, and as much as we expect growing pains to be there pretty significantly, you're playing in a division with three of the worst defenses in the NFC. That right. has got to mean something to sure. and the Packers in 2023. Speaking of the NFC and young quarterbacks, let's go to San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan, Niners head coach, talking about Brock Purdy, and his new quarterback has been a bit susceptible to throwing the training camp INT. Yeah, one of the great debates. Does the training camp INT actually matter, Pritch? Here's Coach Shanahan on the subject.
You never want interceptions in any situation. There's never one answer. Each one's different. I definitely like having interceptions a lot more in practice than in games. And one thing Brock does is he lets it rip. He's not worried about anything else, especially not worried about people counting his interceptions, you know, at practice and stuff. And that doesn't mean they're all right. But I do like him letting it rip. And I like him learning from things that he can't get away with, things he can get away with. And I think our defense got their hands on a lot of balls, not just Brock's. But I definitely want our quarterbacks to cut down on them. But I also want them to make real throws. And when they make mistakes, to learn from them.
Seems like 49ers Twitter has been in a state of tizzy about all the interceptions by Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you've been there. You know what that's like in training camp.
Quarterbacks don't like to throw interceptions, period. And on the other side, defenses celebrate getting interceptions in practice, right? And so that's some great soundbite right there from Kyle. He wants Brock to let it rip. And the reason why he wants him to let it rip is because he will help Brock with his play calling, avoids interceptions. Like, when you throw interceptions in practice, it's scripted. And so, are you throwing interceptions because it was tipped? Or are you throwing interceptions because you're throwing to the wrong place? Did you not understand the coverage? I mean, all those things, they're going to break that down with tape and certainly film study. That is a concern, though, right? You're throwing interceptions against a scripted defense. Can't do that. But I got you. If I'm Kyle Shanahan and I know my ability as a play caller, just let it rip, because I'm going to put you in a better position in the game, because I'm going to be in that opponent's kitchen, sitting at that dining room table or the kitchen table, and understanding exactly what they're trying to do against you.
Sure. Isn't part of that, too, just going back to how the perception on Brock Purdy as a young quarterback, that he's just kind of a check down Charlie. He's just looking at the easy play in front of him. And that offense that Kyle Shanahan has been able to develop with all the pre-snap motion and the movement, it creates so much space that if you are confident in your reads, you can find the bigger play than what is maybe out there just in the periphery of your vision. And maybe you look at the NFC Championship game last year where Brock Purdy looked a little bit, on the first drive. Wasn't necessarily confident in himself, held the ball an extra half beat, gets destroyed, gets knocked out of the game, and boom, San Francisco season is over. I wonder how much of that is part of what we heard from Kyle Shanahan.
A lot of it is, because you got to let it rip. I mean, don't second guess. Don't think out there. Just react. Let your footwork in the pocket dictate a lot of things. But as a play caller, I will help you. I will help you understand where you need to go with the rock, as well as what the offense is trying to do out there on the field against a particular defense.
So at least it's nice to have the conversation about the actual starting quarterback than all the Trey Lance discussion that has thrown the media into a frenzy over the last week with Trey Lance, one of the backup quarterbacks, at least fighting for his role on the San Francisco 49ers roster. When we come back, we've already previewed the Bengals-Falcons preseason game with the Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Next up, we'll preview game number two tonight. It's the Panthers and the Giants. Julian Council from the Locked On Panthers podcast joins the show right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM. For terms and conditions, must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. As we take a look at some of the market movement, Week 2 NFL preseason tonight, there were a lot of overs in Week 1, Pritch. Technically speaking, last night's game did go over, only because there was a giant move to the under of 3 points that barely snuck over the closing total. And we're getting some movement on the over, Panthers-Giants, even though the Panthers put up a big old zero in Week 1. So as we welcome in Julian Council, who hosts the Locked On Panthers podcast, we'll see. Are we going to get a little bit more out of the Panthers offense? Julian, great to have you on here on the Lombardi Line. There was that sense that, the sky is falling in Carolina. It's going to be a disaster because of how bad they looked in Week 1. Where do you stand, though, on what we saw out of Week 1, and what do you expect going into the game tonight?
Yeah, the vibes weren't great coming out of Saturday's loss to the Jets. And it's only preseason, but the result still matters in terms of how you play. And last Saturday was certainly disappointing from the offensive line, which was markedly improved last season after being a massive strength for the Panthers over the last 5-plus season. Arguably, you could look at the quarterback and offensive line positions as debatable which one was worse. So I would expect that O-line to be better than what they showed on Saturday. They still have 4 or 5 starters back from last year that are healthy. Currently, Austin Corbett, who started at right guards on PUP after tearing his ACL in Week 18 against the Saints in January, he'll be back eventually. I feel good about the 4 guys that they have coming back. It's just figuring out that right guard spot and then giving Bryce Young an opportunity to actually operate in this offense, which he did not get a chance to do in the 11 snaps that he played on Saturday. So I expect better offensive line play, which then will result in Bryce Young be able to air it out a little bit more tonight against the Giants.
You know, Julian, I'm all about understanding the psyche of a team, the makeup of a team, because it's different each and every year. Certainly last year, you look at Carolina, what they went through all season, Wilkes takes over, and they start to overachieve, and he gets a lot of that out of that roster. Frank Reich comes in, and okay, inherits his roster. And is it still a filling out process, in your opinion, with the players and the coaching staff, or are they all on the same page now?
I think they're all on the same page as far as their mission, what they want to do this season. You just have to understand, and I agree what you said there was a good point, that they overachieved. And I think that is a little bit clouded people's perception of where this team actually is heading into 2023. Because you look at the fans, they're going to look at the fact they were 7-10 last year, despite not having a passing game, whether it was Baker Mayfield, PJ Walker, or Sam Darnold stepping in there, the quarterback play was pretty bad. It was better than, I guess, it had been the year prior, but it still wasn't good enough. They were a one-dimensional offense, and defensively, they were just okay. So when you bring back guys who overachieve and you add in a new defensive scheme, a new head coach, new offensive scheme, and then you think you get a better quarterback in Bryce Young, you're maybe thinking that the results are going to be better this season. But it's a process. You have a rookie quarterback, again, a new offensive scheme, a new defensive scheme, a brand new coaching staff. While the players, well, most of them, the core is the same, you're bringing in some new guys to really try to integrate and understand what they're trying to do here. So I feel like they're on the same page as what they want to do and what they want to achieve, but they've only played one game with the starters on offense, which is 11 snaps. They've only had one preseason game. They've had 3 weeks throughout the training camp and this week to really understand what they're doing with installs, and then moving forward to working with the Jets last week, playing the Jets, and now working towards the Giants game tonight. So it's there. It's very early into the process for anyone to expect them to be, you know, clicking on all cylinders here in the middle of August.
Give him a follow, by the way, at Julian Council, joining us on the Lombardi line right now. The case to be made, too, for Carolina having success in the division is the fact that basically every other team, including even New Orleans with the West Coast offensive system they have, is going to be more run heavy. And the strength last year for the Panthers was in the run defense, where they end up grading out as a top 12 unit on an EPA per play basis against the run. You have a really good duo on the defensive line. But with Steve Wilks being a defensive-minded guy now out of Carolina, what is the ceiling for the D-line, and just how good do you expect that unit to be once everything does gel and they're all ready to go here for the start of the season?
I think Derek Brown's going to take another step forward. He was outstanding last year. He tied a franchise record for tackles by a defensive tackle. The Panthers decided to reward him by exercising his fifth-year option for next year, going to be about $11 million guaranteed. They bring in Shy Tuttle, who was in New Orleans the last couple seasons, who can start there with him. And then they also got Brian Burns back. He's playing more of a stand-up outside linebacker role. He was more of a hybrid, sometimes handing the dirt, sometimes standing up in Phil Snow's defense the last couple of years. He was the DC here under Matt Rhule before Al Holcomb and Steve Wilks took over as the interims last year. So I expect the defensive line to be very good this season, having two potential stars in Brown and Burns, who eventually here over the next couple of weeks, I imagine, is going to get paid a ton of money to be one of the highest paid edge rushers in football. So I expect that defensive line to still be good and maybe probably take another step forward as they transition to this new 3-4 scheme.
Yeah, that scheme is going to be outstanding. Evero, that's how you pronounce his last name, the defense coordinator. And
yeah,
sought-after guy. And, you know, who knows what happens after 1 year if they're successful, right? And maybe be looking for another defensive coordinator. But I want to go to the offensive side of the ball and Bryce Young. And when you look at the names on the offensive side of the ball from a skilled position standpoint, I mean, it's there for him, right? And what's your assessment of Bryce? I mean, we hear the processor, we hear all this stuff. But watching this guy play, I mean, is he starting to look like that professional quarterback, or does he still have some ways to go here?
Oh, yeah. There's a reason why they decided to take Bryce Young, number one overall. They looked at C.J. Stroud and what he was able to do at Ohio State and looked at Anthony Richardson. And while you look at those guys, see the physical traits, maybe think, okay, do they have a higher ceiling than Bryce? It's possible, but can they come in and immediately operate an NFL offense? Now, Stroud's going to get a chance in Houston. I imagine he's going to be the day one starter. Richardson's already been named a day one starter out there in Indianapolis. But I think the expectation that Bryce Young can come in and make a far more seamless transition from Alabama to the NFL with the Panthers, that's why they decided to take him number one overall. And Thomas Brown, who's now the OC here in Carolina, spent the last couple seasons working with the Rams under Sean McVay, where they've now married that offensive scheme to what Frank Reich ran the last 5 years in Indianapolis. He said the other day that Bryce Young, while he's 22, he has the demeanor of a 45-year-old. Like, he's so mature. And that's been what people have been saying about him from the very beginning. They had a meeting with him after his pro day in Tuscaloosa back in March, where Young was going through his process throughout the week, where he went day to day, just the details and that he was able to lay out, just his process. That's what really won the Carolina Panthers over. Like, from all the reporting out there, the Panthers on March 10th, when they traded up, they were wanting to Bryce Young. But throughout that process, meeting with him, looking at his tape, it was even more clear to them that he was the top guy for them. So I think Bryce Young, his maturity, his ability to lead this team, he's the right guy for the job. I do have serious questions, though, about the guys around him as widely considered one of the worst, and I don't think these guys are that bad, but not considered one of the better receiving trios or cores here in the NFL as far as the skill players go here on offense in Carolina.
You can probably make a pretty good case, Julian. It's the worst wide receiver room in the NFC.
That's true.
That's why I look at it and I go, let's just say the offensive line, you know, we set aside week one and how bad it's looked. They figure it out. There was so much growth a season ago, and Ikem Ekwonu takes another step as a second-year player in that scheme. it's the bigger question to me that isn't getting talked about is, all right, who is going to find rapport with Bryce Young? You know, they have Adam Thielen, Hayden Hurst, a couple of vets brought in, but what have you seen so far from watching camp here as to what can actually be successful around Young, assuming he's able to stay upright behind the O-line?
I guess I'll say this about the staff. They believe in these guys. While everyone is questioning, I certainly have done that on my show throughout the offseason, wondering, okay, is this a good enough group of pass catchers around Bryce Young? Have they done enough? I feel like they're as good as they can be. If you look at last season, after McCaffrey was traded, after Robbie Anderson was traded, who really didn't do anything the last two seasons in Carolina, it was DJ Moore and then sometimes Terrace Marshall. Going into this year, now that DJ's gone, you had Adam Thielen, who had a pretty good year last year. And at age 33, I still think there's something left in the tank. I have questions about what he can do the final 2 years of his deal here in Carolina, but that's a question for the future. This year, I think Thielen can help out. DJ Chark, when healthy, has been a solid player. The problem is he hasn't been healthy. He was a Pro Bowler in the past. That was about 3-4 years ago. We'll see what it looks like now, but there's been a good rapport with him and Bryce Young built up through training camp. Maybe we'll see more of that tonight in the preseason. And the Panthers have not had a pass-catching tight end for like the last 5 years. For Greg Olsen, the last 2 years of his career here in Carolina, broke his foot back-to-back season, so that didn't. They didn't really have someone to step up. Ian Thomas thought that might work out. Matt Rhule, his offense, had no interest in the tight end. The tight end position is now back in Carolina with Hayden Hurst. So you have three options there, where last year you had about 1.5. And Miles Sanders, his rookie year in Philadelphia, got the ball a lot of the backfield. We'll see if they get back to that this year. He hasn't done it the last couple seasons in Philly. So about 3-4 options compared to last season at the end of it, where it's about 1-1.5. So I do think they're in a better position as far as the options that they have. But are these guys combined better than DJ Moore, what they have? Probably not. So it'll be a question all season long. But I do think it's better to have more than one option like the Panthers pretty much have for the last 12 weeks of the season last year.
Got about 20 seconds, Julian. Hold up now.
Yeah.
I thought the quarterbacks are supposed to elevate the wide receivers. Now you're suggesting,
like a wideout,
now you're suggesting that he has nobody to throw to. I mean,
I'm not suggesting that at all, but it's a rookie. We don't want the rookie quarterback coming in anywhere and being asked to elevate. And it's only 1 year. They'll figure it out. Yeah. They'll get people next offseason and they'll build towards it. So,
Rich, yeah, I'm saying they don't have
it's okay.
I'm also saying that. Julian
he's saying
Council,
that a lot of people are saying.
Hey, great spot, man. Thank you so much for the time. Give him a follow at Julian Council. Panthers 3-point dogs to the Giants tonight. A lot of question marks will hopefully be answered in some sense by the Panthers tonight. Thanks as always for the time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, Ben, Mike, appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. And we'll welcome in Josh Applebaum up next. He's got his betting report on week two in the NFL preseason. We'll visit with Josh when we come back to the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month and will help you get ahead of the upcoming NFL season with picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. So become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide or take advantage of our football season special and get access to everything we do through the Super Bowl for only $199. You can sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. A lot of Josh Applebaum in that guide as well mm-hmm. as Mike Pritchard will be involved and included. You were in the original guide, so you'll be in the refreshed betting guide coming out soon. Josh Applebaum joins us fresh off the honeymoon. He's back from Cancun. That, you know, you said you got sunburnt, Josh, but that's just a great base tan, man. I realize when you live in Boston, it's hard to have a perception of that, but you look good, man. Welcome back.
I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, I haven't talked sports with you guys in a while, so it's great to be back with two of my favorite wise guys at VSiN. And I'm a little disappointed, though. Pritch apparently has all these Cancun tips and secrets. I find out about this after I get back from Cancun. So, Pritch, next time you hit me up, you let me know all the good spots to hit up next time.
Well, the secrets and tips that I know about, you don't want to know about them on your honeymoon. Not on your honeymoon.
You're sick. Maybe you're a separate occasion.
Yeah, different subject matter right there, Josh. Yeah.
As part of the tell-all book, don't worry, Josh. That'll be chapter 18.
That might be chapter one.
Okay.
Start off hot on that one.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. So speaking of, starting off hot, we go NFL preseason, Josh, and If you've been betting overs, you've been doing very, very well. Now 11-5-1 is last night technically did go over on the closing number, even though there was a heavy bet to the under. I'm curious, though, what you've made of how just blindly betting line moves has not been profitable whatsoever in the preseason. If you're chasing the steam 6-9 now, if you include last night, Eagles get bet up about 2.5 points. Game ends in a tie. Eagles don't cover as 3.5 point favorites. So what's your take and advice to bettors on how to approach these line moves in preseason where, as I mentioned, 15 of the 17 games with at least a 2-point move and only 6 of those have proven to be winners?
Yeah, I think it's a great point by you, Ben. So for me personally, this is bad news for a guy like me who likes to be with the line movement, because if you just kind of go to a base level standpoint, line movement is driven mostly by respected bettors, by sharp money. Does that mean every line move is going to win? Of course not. But typically I want to be with the sharp money and not against it. I think this kind of speaks to a couple things, guys. One is not trying to, you know, throw away everything that's worked over the past 10 years after just 1 week of the preseason where it really hasn't worked. So I think the easiest thing would be to say, hey, line moves are meaningless. There's no reason to follow them. You might as well just go the other way. Okay, that's done pretty well through, you know, 1 week of the preseason. But we have 10 years of data that shows that a lot of these big sharp line moves, these dog to fave line moves, hit at close to a 60% clip in the preseason. So to me, I think it's just a little bit of, you know, aberrational sort of thing. But I would say also, guys, this is why I like to bet money line favorites. Or if you're going to play, a short spread, go money line. You mentioned dogs. They've done very well, Ben, as well as kind of that magic number of 37. If you're lower than 37, I think the over is now like 9-3. Last night it was 36. I think it closed 35.5 or 36, depending on what number that you got. But also, if you look at money lining short favorites, for example, I was on last night, the Eagles. Obviously, they don't come through for me. It ends up in a tie. But remember, you know, the house rules. You're going to get your money refunded to you or your bet voided if you're on a money line and it's a tie. So that's one way to protect yourself from a short number versus maybe you see a tie in the preseason. But I'm with you, Ben. I'm not going to throw out all this, you know, decades worth of great data on these line moves. I think the public's been cleaning up and saying, hey, bet every dog. It's pretty easy. We got to remember the smart money's moving these lines to the favorite. They're not coming through. To me, this would be something I want to buy low on, because you're having the whole public just think that it's meaningless, where you could see some regression the other way back to the historical norm.
You know, Josh, we got a lot of meaningful football coming up this weekend, I think, in particular because the joint practices, the slate of games are going to be outstanding. We're getting worried about certain starters playing and everything. So bettors probably warming up for this weekend's action in the National Football League. So if you are a data-driven bettor, if you are a system person, and we know that the limits are out there for preseason, like some line movement and then there's steam. And I mean, how do you adjust your system, or do you adjust your system in preseason knowing about the limits as opposed to regular season?
Yeah. So I think, you know, limits obviously being different, you can bet less on these preseason games than you would in a regular NFL game. But to me, I'm not going to adjust it too much, Pritch. Now, you and I, we did so many Betting Across America shows and Lombardi lines together. My model for regular season betting is dogs and unders. Probably 90% of my bets are going to be dogs and unders. Whole reason being, in the NFL, it's such a heavy public bet sport, biggest sport in the country, and you're having all these states legalized, so it just gets bigger every year with more public betting. So public loves favorites, public loves overs. Easiest way to go contrarian, go the other way, dogs and unders. Then we have systems like, you know, divisional dogs or short road dogs or dogs with line moves or primetime dogs, primetime unders. That's been the best spot overall. But to me, Pritch, I think you got to take it a little bit differently. You know, regular season, we're going to expect all these guys to play and play the whole game. Preseason, it's all about not just the data. Like, to me, the data is so strong in the regular season of the NFL because we kind of expect who's going to play. It's still strong in the preseason, but I think it's not, you can't cap solely on the data. Sure. That's probably, you know, 80% of your cap. The other 20% or more is going to be information-based bets. What are the coaches saying? Are they going to play their guys? Are they going to sit their guys? That's the big advantage you have in the preseason. Of course, not every move is going to come through, but maybe you target a first half instead of a full game odd line movement or line spot there. To me, that's what you got to do. Take a little more stock into the information than maybe you would during the regular season.
Yeah, so let's get into where this could be actionable for tomorrow. Josh, healthy slate of games for Saturday in preseason week 2. And interesting, we'll get two teams who had significant line moves in their favor last week. Chicago Bears won with a big line move. The Indianapolis Colts did not on the road against Buffalo. So Colts right now hosting the Chicago Bears and have gotten a big move from 2 on the opener. I'm seeing either 4.5 or 5, even a couple offshores I'm seeing already going to 5.5. So big move here coming on to the Colts. Josh, what's your interpretation of that and how are you attacking it?
I'm attacking it by I'm going down with the ship with these sharp line moves, guys. They haven't been too as productive as I've wanted them to be. But here's another example of smart money going with the Colts. Both from a data-driven standpoint and an information-based bet standpoint. So you mentioned here, Ben, big movement toward the Indianapolis Colts. They opened, I saw some shops as low as like a -2 opener, 2.5. Now you're up to 4.5, even maybe some shops going to 5. So pretty lopsided movement in favor of the Colts. What I like about the Colts, though, and if you can really put some stock into our VSiN.com bet splits coming directly from DraftKings, which is a big public book, takes a lot of public wagers here. It's a very good kind of indicator of where the masses are at. If you look at the bet splits right now, only 21% of bets are taking the Colts. Everybody and their mother, this is a contrarian play. It's also a primetime game, 7:00. Nearly 80% of bets are going with the Chicago Bears. So if everyone's going with the Bears, why are we seeing the Colts move so much? -2 up to inching up toward 4.5. Only 20% of bets, but 50% of the money is on the Colts. And I think, so that would classify them as a contrarian play, a bet against the public play, a sharp reverse line move, a fade the trendy dog opportunity. But also, again, applying the information here, we've already heard Matt Eberflus, the coach, come out and say Justin Fields is not going to play. A lot of their starters are not going to play. So your quarterbacks, and here's another thing, Pritch knows this when you're capping preseason, and Ben, you do too. You lean a lot on those quarterback depth charts. Who is going to be at QB? You're going to get PJ Walker, Nathan Peterman, by the way, still hanging around the NFL, probably going to get him, and Tyson Badgett, who is a rookie from, I think, a D2 school. Meanwhile, if you look at what the Bears did with Fields, when he was there in that Week 1 game, he was great. He had 2 long touchdown passes. When he was out, their offense really couldn't do anything. They could only get 3 field goals overall. You flip it the other way, you're probably going to get also some defensive starters out for the Chicago Bears. And with the Colts, you're probably going to get Gardner Minshew quite a bit. To me, this is a team that you kind of want to buy low on. What will we see out of Richardson? To me, in this spot, and also, guys, you're going to hear this a lot on hashtag gambling Twitter, kind of the zigzag, where if a team won their first preseason game and their opponent lost their first preseason game, it's kind of like when you have like a 2-game series in other sports. You win the first, like back-to-back in hockey, you win the first one, second one, you don't really care as much, or I guess the motivation isn't quite as there. So if we have this big sharp line move to the Colts, they're going to play quite a few of their starters. Bears are going to sit out a lot of their guys. I'm going to go down with the ship with another sharp line move, guys. I'm going to go -200. I know it's a big number, but money line. You don't want to see the Colts win by 1, 2, 3, or 4. You push, you lose. So I'm money lining the Colts here to win this thing tomorrow night. By the way, Pritch,
Shepherd University Rams, alma mater.
That's right.
One Tyson Badgett. So
ooh, okay.
That is in
the Rams, huh?
West Virginia, which I had no idea until I looked up the Wikipedia a second ago.
What about totals, Josh? I mean, real quick. I mean, steam. You can say that happened in a game last night, but in terms of totals, I mean, key number 38 or 37.5 here.
Yeah, I think it's just so important, Pritch, to once you see your live odds page, and if you're not betting with a live odds page, I think you're really hurting yourself, because it's almost like we're traders on Wall Street. You know, we're trying to follow the money where, and also get the moves before they move too much. Yeah. So as we know, you got to have multiple outs. You can't just bet through one sports book. So perfect example, yesterday, that total opened, what was it, 37.5? It went up to 38, and then it came crashing down to 35.5, 36. So, you know, my suggestion, Pritch, would be, If you don't get the immediate move, like as soon as it takes place, wait to the very end. Like if you bought low and took over 35.5 last night, you were able to cash your bet. If you also got the early under, you cashed your bet. So always say to yourself, has it moved so much to, am I getting the worst of the number at this point, or am I theoretically getting the best of it? If you're getting the worst of it, to me, it's a no bet. If you're getting the best of it, it could be a buy low or a kind of a buy high play.
And can create some outstanding middle opportunities. We were talking about that with Will Hill a couple days ago on the show. Give him a follow at Josh_insights, and also check out, we'll have a couple of baseball plays from Josh in our VSiN Pro subscribers up on the website. Also check out his daily morning bets pods. We'll also break down his MLB splits, because no rest for the weary, Josh. We're still handicapping baseball every day, which I love from what you're doing. Great to see you as always, Josh. Be well.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great day.
We will wrap up the show next. Some NFL injury news as always, and close the show right after this.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Use a BetMGM bonus bet to place your next wager on any game in any sport. To receive your bonus bet, simply log into your BetMGM account today to bet on any game of your choice, then add any type of bet on any game to your bet slip and activate your bonus bet. There is no deposit or additional wager required. You have 72 hours to log in to claim and use the bonus bet after login. The bonus bet is on the house. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Promotion may differ per customer. 21 or older to wager. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, Nevada, New York, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Big thanks to D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Julian Council of the Locked On Panthers podcast, and Josh Applebaum, who just joined us from the Morning Daily Bets and Market Insights pods for joining us here on the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Pro tip time. You ready, Pritch?
I'm ready.
Let's go. We were talking rookie wide receiver props earlier, and I think this is a great pro tip to bring as a result of why we like Quentin Johnston for LA. So when you're betting NFL player props, consider targeting players in positional groups that lack durability. So a great example would be Quentin Johnston. He's behind Keenan Allen and Mike Williams on the depth chart in LA. Two guys who have historically been very, very brittle. And if you were setting the over-under on games played, it definitely would not be 16 and a half. It would probably be more like, what, 12 and a half maybe? Maybe that's generous? I don't know.
Yeah, it could be generous. It could be generous. Also, you combine that, too, with Justin Herbert, who, again, the guy will attempt a lot of passes. Kellen Moore is the offense coordinator now. Running game, what's that, right? And then Justin Herbert completed 477 passing attempts last year. So 13 behind Tom Brady. I mean, Quentin Johnston's in a good spot if and when Keenan Allen and Mike Williams are not available.
And again, those are for those season-long props. I think the flip side of the coin is maybe stay away from guys who are in really crowded situations where you figure there might be a more difficult path to legitimate amounts of playing time and overall productivity. So that's a great way just to, as you're diving into the markets and wanting to make some season-long futures that might not just be Super Bowl or MVP or division winner, that can be a really good way to go about attacking it. As we finish up some of our headlines for today, so we had this come on right as Jonathan Montoble and I were coming on the air yesterday, Pritch, where Teron Armstead was carted off the field, joint practices for the Miami Dolphins this week in their preseason buildup against the Houston Texans. So Armstead goes off. It's a guy who's had a very checkered injury past going back to his time with New Orleans. Good news, though, last night comes out, says, and basically tweets that he just got landed on during a team run in practice, is targeting week one to return. So they're going to be cautious here because of the previous injury history, but it doesn't sound serious. And think about, you know, normally we wouldn't make a big deal out of a left tackle going down with just a minor injury, but this is an offensive line that needs to be healthy with how banged up Tua Tagovailoa has been with multiple concussions a season ago. And when you consider the overall scheme for head coach Mike McDaniel, is there a team that needs an offensive line more than Miami? I think you could argue there isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, we still have to be concerned about Tua staying healthy too. I mean, the thing about injuries been, you know, is the pain. Like, players can go, but the pain, you know, and or you're healthy enough, but no, you know what, coach, it just doesn't feel right. Or you tell the trainer, it just doesn't feel right. So the track record of the player, are they able to set aside pain, even though they are injured or they're banged up or whatever the case may be? Can they set that aside and still play at a high level? I mean, that to me as a bettor is so valuable that I want to know and distinguish between, this guy said, I'm going to be all right for the season, but are they going to be able to endure and play through the pain? Because some guys can't. Some guys will not go out there knowing that their pain tolerance is not that high.
And, I mean, Teron Armstead, whatever you want to say about the pain tolerance, the reality is he's missed a lot of games
over
the past few seasons. It does help that Miami, they brought in Isaiah Wynn from New England. Could be some insurance there if Armstead does miss some time. But
big tackle up in New England comes to mind, too. Trent Brown?
That's also been, I mean, that's been an issue of durability for New England. And it's a big reason why there were some struggles there a season ago. He is at least expected to be starting left tackle, though, going into this year for the New England Patriots. So we'll kind of continue to monitor all of that. It leads me into, though, since Miami was a playoff team a season ago, they are not among the most bet teams either to make or miss, but just interesting to see here where the money is at. And I think this is a good exercise to do simply because, Mike, we get into our own little media bubble sometimes. I think a great example of that is it seems like, just anecdotally, a lot of people we know and talk to are really high on the Green Bay Packers this year, or the Cincinnati Bengals, a very popular pick in our VSiN betting guide. That might not be, though, just a real true representation of the entire betting market. Like, we're just a very small cross-section of the betting industry and what actual bettors are looking at. So as we take a look at most bet teams here to make, what stands out here to you, Pritch? Because by ticket count, Broncos, Steelers, Browns, all at plus money, Browns at even money. To make the playoffs, that's just on ticket count, which could be, $2 to $2,000. So money is where I always look at least with more convictions from bettors. And the Commanders getting the most money at plus 375 to make the playoffs. Pats plus 240, which is on Michael Lombardi's playoff list this year, and the Seahawks at minus 120. What are you fading or following on that list?
Well, it's interesting because I come in each and every year knowing there's more constants in the National Football League than outliers. So with that in mind, okay, the Broncos to make the playoffs, wild card. Is that division going to produce three playoff caliber teams, right? Go to the AFC North. You know, when you look at the Steelers and the Browns, both of them, good chance that three could come out of there. So now there's your bet, probably. Are the Steelers to make the playoffs or the Browns? And either one, what, plus 145 for the Steelers, plus 100 for the Browns. You know, for the Broncos, I think they're going to surprise people. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I think the Raiders, and then you got the Chargers to deal with too. So I think the Raiders could surprise people. That's something from a make the playoff bet. I would be interested.
You're definitely going Oppo on the consensus. Too,
yeah,
the
but yeah, yeah, absolutely going Oppo of the consensus. I mean, the most bet by money. I mean, the Commanders again. Look at that division. You know, and again, I don't want to chase the consensus, or I don't want to chase the popular bet either. But the Patriots, you know, looking at that division, you know, Miami, the Bills, and the Jets. Okay, the Patriots, do they sneak in there? Really? You know, that kind of thing. And then the Seahawks, I think the Seahawks could win a division, to be honest with you. I think they're that good.
Yeah. Is that a divisional bet wise? They're down to around 2-1. I think the reason why there's so much money on Seattle, because you've got the insurance and minus 120. It's not a ridiculous minus money number to have to pay. I still have concerns about the offensive line. They had such a, I mean, we think about this in the same sense of Carolina, where you talk about overachieving from one year to the next. Where the two rookie tackles play every snap a season ago for Seattle. Will there be a regression at all? Because as much as we talk about Geno Smith regressing as a quarterback, I think it's much more likely based on the numbers and just the overall positional projections that the O-line takes a step back. And that still could be something that hurts Seattle amidst the division. If you're talking about beating San Francisco, you got to have the dudes in the trenches. And I'm still a little bit suspect in my own mind about, does Seattle really have the guys to do
well, that? Well, not a lot of teams had the dudes against that San Francisco defense, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the point.
I think the experience kind of helps Seattle. You know, I just mentioned about more constants than outliers. And so I'm believing that Seattle has become a constant. You know, the outlier was last year because it was Geno. Okay, what is he going to do at quarterback? You know, journeyman and all this stuff. And lo and behold, they make the playoffs and all this. But and that division, and Seattle fully knows what they're up against. I mean, you're going up against Aaron Donald twice, right? And, you know, from an offensive line standpoint, those guys are going to have to grow up. You know, that is something that is said in a locker room for young players. You're not young anymore. You got to grow up and be a man and play this game at a high level. We expect that to happen. So I get it. I get what you're saying. I think they'll be improved if Walker the third can stay healthy. Charbonnet, I mean, they got a 1-2 punch that I think that can be a pretty high caliber. And then Geno just needs to be consistent. Yep. And if he is, he'll help out that offensive line too with the passing game.
And also, when you just consider the weakness of the NFC.
Yeah.
I mean, at worst, I would rate Seattle as the fourth best team in the NFC. And if you're listing everybody 1-16. And so even setting aside the division there, I just generally believe that Seahawks bet is smarter because even if it's a small minus money.
Yeah.
You have a much better chance of catching that ticket. And also, right. I'd say take these splits with a big old healthy pinch of salt, because the Steelers are on the most bet teams by ticket to make, and they're on the most bet teams by money to miss. Yeah. And
you can go ahead and say a handful of salt, not a pinch.
No, okay, we're gonna start taking the grinder.
And yeah, right.
Throwing it all out there. So anyway, that's where I look at it. The one that I think would be a surprise, because there's a narrative that the Jets super popularly bet team, but at least at MGM, the most single team by ticket count to miss the playoffs, and second most bet by money to miss at plus 115. Again, this isn't necessarily just an indicator of, you know, sharp, super pro money. It can just be some person with a lot of money to spend who wants to throw a big bet on one of these teams, and it can sometimes skew the data. So definitely take it with a healthy handful of salt there. Pritch, as always, man, been a blast hanging out with you.
Ben,
these 2 hours
it.
Always fly by.
It does. Absolutely, man. Have a great weekend.
I absolutely will. I'll be up bright and early tomorrow. Be back with Michael Saturday, Sunday on the show. Big thanks to Elliot Bowman, our producer. We'll see Elliot back here this weekend and the rest of the crew. Nick, Mikhail, Sergio, Aramis, Andre, Troy, all helping out here behind the scenes at our Circus Sportsbook studio. So for Mike Pritchard, I'm Ben Wilson, saying so long on the Friday edition of the Lombardi Line from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.